Ohayo gozaimasu, konnichiwa, konbanwa, for whenever you're listening to the Joshi Pod, a podcast about the world of Japanese women's wrestling, Joshi Wrestling. I'm your host, Eric Howard, coming to you from beautiful San Diego, California. And on this episode, we have the one, the only, Lady Beard. I should probably leave the singing to Lady Beard. He does it much better than I do. It was a real fun conversation. He's a wonderful man, wonderful person. We get into his new project, Baby Beard. We go into his wrestling. We go into his being born with a beard, his family having rash on their face because his beard brushes against them, and all kinds of good stuff. Real fun chat. I really missed interviewing and chatting with people. It's real fun to get back in the swing of things. I've got my 8th episode 2022 revival. This is episode 1. Episode 2 will be out next week, and then after that we'll see. But guys, please enjoy this chat with Lady Beard. I think we get into some of the magic that is Lady Beard. It's not the kawaii outfits. It's not the beard. It's not the ponytails. It's the person. He's a wonderful person and a very driven person and somebody to look up to and admire. And enjoy this chat with Lady Beard, and let's hear some Baby Beard before we hear from Lady Beard. Hey guys, back here at the Joshi Pod, and super duper duper excited to have somebody I've wanted to talk to for a long time and finally got him online here. Lady Beard, welcome to the Joshi Pod.
Oh, Eric Howard, my dear friend, Joshi Pod listeners, how are we today? Lady Beard is in the building. Lady Beard's on the podcast. We are ready to amaze you with whatever the hell's about to happen. Eric, how are you, sir?
I'm very well. Sounds like you had a few Red Bulls this morning, or?
No, not one. I'm actually very sleepy.
So, Lady Beard, the Joshi Pod is about having the Joshi wrestlers come on here from the U.S., from around the world, from Japan, and you kind of live in the spirit of that as well, because you traveled and made something of yourself outside of Australia and moved and became a wrestler, entertainer, and that kind of spirit is what the Joshi Pod is all about, going out there and risking it and making something of yourself.
Well, look, there's no return without risk, is there? That's what the Bitcoin people keep telling me anyway.
How's that working for you?
I don't have any. Oh. I don't have any Bitcoin. I couldn't figure out how to make a wallet.
Me neither. So we'll go into I don't want to go step by step in your life, but let's start kind of from, were you born with a beard?
I actually was. Now, it was a large problem for my mother, you see. When I was an infant, any kind of cuddling or other human contact would result in a rash for the recipient of the cuddle. So I apologize to everyone in my life who's received a rash from cuddling me, especially in my infancy.
So all your baby pictures with your family, it's like just rashes on the side of their cheeks?
Oh, the poor people. It's just scratched out pink faces all over the place. I don't know why they didn't just push me back in and say, oh, let's just wait for the next one.
Like an elephant keep you in there for a while.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Wait for me to finish baking. Get that hair off.
So what was your childhood like? I mean, were you a born entertainer?
No, I was bullied a lot. I was a fat boy who was bullied a lot. That's what my childhood was like. So when you are a fat boy that's bullied a lot, you realize one of the only ways you can kind of, I guess, remain safe and also get any kind of approval is to be funny. And so it was a lot of being funny, because that was much better than an ass kicking.
So at what point do you kind of like turn from people bullying you to like becoming the funny guy and the entertainer and the class clown?
I don't don't know, actually. I'd say, I don't know. I mean, things changed a lot through puberty, I suppose. But really, and once high school was done, it's a totally different game, isn't it? Because once you get out of high school, you kind of reset in a totally different world with a totally new set of people. So, listen, we got very serious very quickly on this podcast, didn't we? Let's go back to scratching your family with beards. That's a far funnier way to start.
Before we started recording, we talked about how the world is just so happy right now. We got to bring it down a notch because everybody's having such a great time.
Yeah, we've got to depress it up. You know, 2020 and 2021, they've been joyous years for everybody. Everyone's been running around freely, embracing one another, socializing a lot. It's time to distance ourselves from one another and get a bit bored.
So let's move past that. When did you decide to become an entertainer?
From a relatively young age. So what happened was I was in high school. I'm from a very academic family. So I thought I was supposed to do, you know, an academic career. All the men in my family are lawyers and whatnot. So I was planning to be a physiotherapy. A physiotherapist, like my mum, right? My mum was a physiotherapist. So I was planning to be a physiotherapist. And so I'm there in year 10 or 11 or whatever, and I'm doing my homework because you had to do physics in order to get into physiotherapy in university, right? And so I started out strong in physics at the very start, but then once it turned into protons and neutrons and all that kind of thing, I fell off the academic cliff, never to return. So, and because I wanted to be an actor or heavy metal singer, right? But that was not an academic career, and there was no notion that that could actually be a real job. This is why I was like, all right, we're going to be a physiotherapist, don't I? So I'm sitting there one night in year 11 or whatever, year 10 something, doing my physics homework, struggling, failing, not understanding anything. And I remember I got to a point when I was so frustrated and I went, damn it, I threw my pencil across the room and I went, screw this, I'm going to be an actor.
What did your parents think? They just laugh at you or they kind of support
you? No, they're awesome. My parents are wonderful. They supported the whole thing the whole time.
So you watch Neighbors and decide, hey, I want to be on Neighbors someday, or what happens in Australia?
Listen. Kylie Minogue, Nicole Kidman, these are massive inspirations for we Australians. These are part of our culture, part of our entertainment institutions. Russell Crowe, these are those who have gone before us and guide the light for the rest of us. I can't remember the question.
Will you do a cover of The Locomotion like Kylie Minogue?
Come on, I'll do a death metal cover. Come on, baby, do a locomotion! That's appropriate, man. No other Joshi on this pod has done that.
No, absolutely not.
How about yourself, Eric? At what age did you decide you were going to enter the ridiculous world of wrestling and podcasting?
Probably about 4 years ago.
Oh, okay, very good. Excellent.
I went to Japan. The Joshi wrestlers treated me so kindly that I decided I had to come back to America and tell the world about Joshi wrestling.
Oh, that's lovely. That's a lovely story.
Emi Sakura was so sweet to me, and just all the rest were just so sweet to me, and I came back and decided to do this.
Oh, great. So you know Sakura-san at Gato Move.
Yes. That's where I went to the show, and I was like, man, people have to know about this.
Oh, good man. She is a wonderful woman. She's been very nice to me ever since I got here.
We need to see you at Ichikaya, Chocolate Square.
Chocolate Square! Chocolate Square! Some stay dry and others wrestle there. Chocolate Square! See what I did there? I took a thing about chocolate, made another thing about chocolate. That's what I did.
You're such an entertainer.
No, I'm a moron. I was a baby with a beard. Hey, I have a new pop group called Baby Beard. Go to babybeard _ Japan on the internet. I just threw that in there. We'll talk about it more later.
And the new song, Pianaiza.
Pianaiza, yes!
I can't say it without singing it. I literally cannot say Pianaiza.
God bless. Yes, for those listening, I'm a wrestler. I'm a Joshi wrestler in that I'm a cross-dresser with a beard and also a heavy metal singer. And I have a new pop group called Baby Beard. That's babies plus lady beard equals baby beard. It's very logical in that sense. You can go onto the internet to babybeard_Japan and see all our things. Our brand new song, Pianaiza, is recently up on the YouTubes. You can go there and enjoy it. PN is the name of the big eyes about to cry emoji in Japanese. So that's a song about things happening that make you want to cry. But not to worry, because tomorrow's a new day. So happy up. And our first song, Nippon Kara Konnichiwa, which means hello from Japan, is also up on the YouTubes. You can go, you can have a look, you can have a boogie, you can make a video of you dancing our dance and singing our songs. Put it on the internet and we'll tell you what we think about it.
Do what he just said.
Yes. Look, this has gone directly into a huge PR spiel, hasn't it?
It's fine.
We were just getting to know each other, and then suddenly it's become an advertisement. My goodness.
I try to say Pien Nai Zar. I can't, but I have to Pien Nai Zar. That's the only way I can say that word. Yeah.
No, that's it. That's correct. Good job. That's good. Pien, then eyes, as in eyes, nose, mouth. Pien eyes er. Nah.
Pien eyes er.
Yes, perfect. Good
Thank
job.
You. Thank you. Yes. We learned it together. Thank you very much.
Yes, this is educational. This is really an educational podcast.
You're going back to your brains, your education. You're an educator and an entertainer.
Yes, that's what we're here for. Not educating in physiotherapy, though. I threw my pencil on that topic, so there's no pencil to teach you that. But I can teach you Japanese pronunciation and emoji slang. It's a wealth of information in that department.
Maki Ito taught me a bad word in Japanese. I can't remember what she taught me, but
I'm sure she did. I'm sure she did.
So you're in Australia. You're ready to branch out. How do you find your way off the island to go somewhere else and abroad to do something away from Australia?
Before I moved to Japan, I actually moved to Hong Kong. And so with my original career being an actor, I was an actor and a stuntman. And so I went to Hong Kong to do kung fu movies. And so I went there, and actually it's while I was in Hong Kong that I started wrestling.
So how do you know to go to Hong Kong to become an actor?
So I finished acting school in Australia, and then I was training with an Aussie who had been on Jackie Chan's stunt team. So I trained with him for about a year, learning the Hong Kong cinematic action style, because I was a martial artist as well. So I was training with him, and there wasn't really any work in Australia for actors because we have such a tiny industry. So he said, you should go to Hong Kong, because you go to Hong Kong, there you're a minority, so your pool of competition is much smaller than at home. So worst case scenario, you can go to Hong Kong for a little while, a few months, do a couple of movies or bits of TV or something and get some experience and come back home more employable because you got more experience now. So I was like, all right, that sounds like a good plan. So I went to Hong Kong, and my plan was to go for 3 months, and I ended up staying 6 years.
So I'm so fascinated by how people make that leap of faith in themselves and go do that. Were there ever any doubts or anything when you were in Hong Kong about, man, did I do the right thing? Or are you kind of just gung-ho, let's see what happens?
Ah, massive doubts. Ridiculous amount of doubt. My God. I showed up 23 years old in Hong Kong. All right. I have this demo reel of me doing action. I have like one contact. All right, God give me wings and let's just cold call this city till it can be cold no more. So actually what happened was I found an element of success in Hong Kong, which was great, and I sorted myself out with a life as an actor and a voice actor and stuntman, and that was wonderful. And I was like, well, this is wonderful, I've actually done it, I'm actually an actor. And then that 2008 financial crisis came along and wiped the whole thing out. So overnight I found myself no longer an actor. I found myself an unemployed actor. So now not only am I, unemployed, but I'm also on the other side of the world and alone, and everything I've built is gone. So I'm like, all right, how am I going to dig myself out of this hole? And I came to the very logical conclusion that I could solve my problems by becoming a cross-dressing pro wrestler and heavy metal singer.
What could go wrong with that?
Well, exactly. That's what I thought. I said to myself, hey, if ever there were a plan that's tried and tested and guaranteed to work, this is it.
If I had a dollar for every time I laid in bed and thought about I should become a cross-dressing wrestler, I would be a millionaire by now.
You know, all those people who are sitting there in law school, or they've finished law school, they're there at some high-powered law firm, bringing in millions upon millions in commission per year, or people in plastic surgery. They're sitting there thinking to themselves, oh, this is some chump change. I should have gone with the cross-dressing wrestler metal singer. I would have really been paying the bills right now. All of them think that. Everyone.
Were you a wrestling fan ever, or is it kind of just fell into it?
No, I was a wrestling fan. I didn't get to see that much of it when I was growing up, to be honest, because I didn't really have great access to it. It wasn't really on free-to-air TV in Australia much when I was young. It was a little bit, but it was like in the middle of the night, and so it was tough. If you didn't have cable, it was hard to watch. But I did like it. I just didn't have that much exposure. I was always interested in trying, but in my city, the gyms, like the wrestling gyms, were always on the other side of town. It was just inaccessible.
You train martial arts, so you're an athletic guy. So you just thought, I'm kind of an athletic guy, I think I can do it?
No, I was, well, like I started out as a fat boy, so I was not athletic at all to begin with, but I did a bunch of martial arts and I found myself, able to walk in a straight line. So I was always interested in trying because I kind of thought, well, I mean, it's the natural progression of the things I already do, isn't it? Like, I'm already an actor, I'm already a martial artist, I'm already a fight performer. So wrestling's really just another stage for those things. It's just another set of conventions and another format of doing the same things. So that's why I was always interested in having a crack.
So a question for you. I keep cutting you off. I apologize. All right. There's some guts needed to dress in a dress.
Hmm.
What sort of, where did that thought, that crumb start in your mind to do that? And then the guts to have to go do it in public?
Before I answer that question, let me ask you, sir.
Yep.
Have you ever worn a dress?
I have.
Yes, good man. Excellent. How did it go?
Oh, it was awesome. It was Halloween. I was dressed as Miss America. It was beautiful.
Miss America. Okay, so you cried only one time?
Only one time. My mom went dress shopping with me, so it was wonderful.
Okay, so let's see. In your cross-dressing life of one night, you went to a party in a dress and everyone went, woo, right?
Girls loved me that night.
Okay, so this is how my cross-dressing career also began, except I went to a friend's birthday party at age 14, and it was a school uniform birthday party, and I said it'd be really funny if I wore my big sister's school dress, and so I did, and it was a huge hit amongst the 14-year-olds, and from that point on, I became a casual cross-dresser every now and again, wearing a school dress to parties and rock and roll shows and things like this. And people love, a man in a skirt. Now, keep in mind, this is a bit of a different conversation in, the year 2022. Mm-hmm. When I started doing this, it was back in the 90s, yeah? Mm-hmm. So it was a different time. Now, a man in a dress, especially a bearded man in a dress, is a polarizing figure. You walk into the room, and half the people love you, and half the people hate you. So. But for those who love you, it's interesting because generally speaking, I should actually correct what I just said. It's more like 90% of the people love you and 10% of the people hate you. Now, the problem is that 10 is a very vocal 10. But for the 90% that love you, a bearded man in a dress walks in and everybody straight away goes, woo! And they love it. And the party has started when the bearded man in the dress arrives, right? As you can attest to.
Yes, exactly.
Yes. This is how my cross-dressing career began.
All right. So you're wrestling, you're cross-dressing, you're in Hong Kong, successful crash. How do you end up in Japan?
Post-crash, I'm sitting there in Hong Kong going, what am I gonna do? And I was in a mosh pit at a heavy metal show, and I saw a young man wearing a t-shirt that said Hong Kong Wrestling Federation. And I said to him, what's that? And he said, that's our local pro wrestling fed. I'm a wrestler. Hey, you want to come to training? And I'm like, do I ever? So I show up at training. And it was amazing, actually. These kids, these like 20-year-old kids in Hong Kong, they had rented out this filthy space in an industrial building out in the like the sticks, in the Hong Kong version of the sticks, right? And they had sourced like blueprints for a wrestling ring from the internet. They had gone and purchased a whole lot of steel and like vinyl to make ropes and cable and things like this. And they had homemade their own ring in this industrial space. And it was amazing. They had built pro wrestling in Hong Kong from the ground up. And the leader of that group was actually Ho Ho Lun, who competed in WWE's first, was it the Cruiserweight Classic, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Ho Ho Lun, who went on to the WWE. That was his fed. My first match ever was with Ho Ho Lun.
That's amazing. See, I love stories like that from like people that want it so bad they have to like create it themselves.
Yeah. So Ho Ho Lun, man, that guy is really quite amazing. Like, pro wrestling was, no one in Hong Kong knew what it was. The older generation a little bit, because it had been on TV back in the 80s or something, but of Ho Ho's generation, no one knew what it was. So really, Ho Ho, I got to take my hat off to that man. He built it from nothing with no resources whatsoever apart from what he could pull together himself. It's very impressive, actually.
Do you have like any culture shock, or you miss your family or miss Australia at all when you're in Hong Kong?
Yeah, big time.
Yeah.
Big time.
What keeps you motivated to keep going there?
Well, I mean, okay, well, so now I'm in Japan, so it's a different thing. But when I was in Hong Kong, it's we're getting quite deep quite quickly.
I like the dichotomy of, you know, serious and fun.
Okay, cool. In that case, we'll get serious for a minute, won't we? As we already discussed, 2020 was a really happy year for everyone, so it's time to bring it down a notch.
Nothing going on bad in the world right now at all. Nothing at all.
No, things are joyous. The whole reason I left home was with a mission and a purpose. So if you keep your eyes on the mission and the purpose and remember what you're doing there, but that's why you're there. Mm-hmm. So therefore, it's always a case of, well, I can go home anytime. And that's kind of one of the things that allows you to not go home. The fact that you can be at home within 24 hours. When there's no pandemic, under normal circumstances, you can be at home within 24 hours, you know? Yeah. So, you know, if you've got a small amount, like enough money in the bank to buy a plane ticket, and, you know, you're silly to have less money than that there when you're overseas. You can go home anytime. I knew that at home, there wasn't really much waiting for me career-wise. There was my family and everything, which is wonderful. And I love them dearly and everything. But in terms of my career, which is really what I was trying to get going on, there was just nothing there for me. So it's like, all right, well, I'm here to make the career. It's, you know, you stay focused and it's a sacrifice that one must make.
Yeah. Mm. So when did from Hong Kong to transitioning away from Hong Kong, how'd that come about?
So I started wrestling in Hong Kong and that went very well. And then I started my heavy metal career in Hong Kong. And then so Hong Kong is a case of Hong Kong, for those who don't know, is a special administrative region of the People's Republic of China. It's just one city. So if you're going to do any kind of, if you're going to do music stuff there, unless you're going to be a really mainstream Canto pop singer, which is not possible if you're not a Cantonese person, then you basically have to tour. So I started touring, and I started touring the surrounding areas. So I organized a kind of a DIY tour to Japan, and that went really, really, really well. The Japanese loved they loved the whole thing. They loved the bearded white man in the dress singing heavy metal covers of Japanese pop songs and doing pro wrestling. They loved it. So I did my first tour here. It went really well. And I said, well, clearly I found my people. I got to move myself there.
Again, another leap of faith in yourself to do that. I find that so admirable.
Thanks, man. Well, look, it's, you know, you don't start out good at these things. It's like anything, it's small steps and it's bit by bit. And at some point you take a leap of faith and elements of it work and elements of it don't work. And you acknowledge what worked and you try to learn from what didn't work. And then because you've taken a leap of faith and survived, well, now you go, all right, well, learning from that experience, what's the next leap of faith I can take? And it's just, if you keep on taking your leaps of faith, those leaps increasingly get larger and larger. And your confidence grows more and more, and you get to the point when you kind of go, all right, so it's a funny thing because I look back and I'm like, yeah, it's just all it is when you think about it, literally, it's just buying a plane ticket. And it's just going to a different place and, you know, booking a place to stay and then going and contacting people and trying to organize opportunities. When you look at it logically and forensically and objectively, there's not that much to it. It's only that it's unfamiliar and hence frightening.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the only part that's really challenging. But then once you've, you know, done it, like I've been overseas for 15 years now. So now the idea of going overseas is just like, oh yeah, cool. Like it's exciting now as opposed to being frightening.
So how'd you get into wrestling in Japan? What was your contact there?
Ha, this is a good story. So I got here and I, so after I left Hong Kong, I went back to Australia and I kind of trained for a year with a fed in my city called Riot City Wrestling. Shout out. They're amazing. Check them out. And also Wrestle Rampage down in Adelaide, South Australia. Check them out. And so then I trained back in Adelaide and then I moved to Japan and I had, you know, some videos of some matches and whatnot, which I then, you know, all my matches are ridiculous in comedy and so forth. So I had them subtitled into Japanese. And so I was going to use these in the same way as when I was an actor. I used my show reel to hustle up opportunities. I was going to use my wrestling reel to hustle up opportunities. So I had these burnt onto some, you know, awful looking CDs. And I think I had, I think this was YouTube had started by then. So I had them on YouTube as well. Two things simultaneously happened. One was I managed to, through a series of contacts and whatnot, I got in touch with Kenny Omega and I showed him my matches and he wrote back saying, I think you're very appropriate for DDT. So let me try and talk to someone at the office and see if they're interested. And I was like, Kenny, you are the greatest human being that's ever lived. Thank you, my friend. Yeah, by the way, big love to Kenny Omega. That man is a gentleman. So everyone get behind Kenny. And then whilst that was happening also, so my first month or two in Japan, DDT did this, they did like a public match, which was out in a kind of a public amphitheater thing out in Kawasaki or something. So I go out there with the deliberate intention of trying to find someone I could hustle up my work to on this show. Kenny was on the show and I was like, yay. So I'm standing in the audience and I'm not in gimmick. I look like a regular person. I'm standing in the audience, and so Dan Shokudino was on this show. We all know who Dan Shokudino is, listeners?
We do.
Okay, cool. So Dan Shokudino, if you don't know, Dan Shokudino does an offensively stereotypical gay gimmick, but it's kind of like gay as it was depicted on Aussie TV in the 1980s. It's, you know, men trying to chase and kiss other men and slap men on the ass and all this kind of thing, right? So it's not a realistic depiction of a gay people. Anyone offended? Apologies. It's not my gimmick. I'm just telling you what happened. So Don Chocodino's on this show. What he does is on his way to the ring, he kisses random men in the audience. So he's coming out and he kisses some man. And most men, they get kissed and they just sort of like, oh, I'm just kind of slumped down, right? He comes out and I see him see me and, you know, he sees me and he goes, oh, I'm kissing him. You can see him make the decision. So he beelines at me, grabs me, plants a big old kiss on me, and I did this big pro wrestling sell. And so he finishes his kiss and I'm like, yeah, nani kore? And I'm like, what the hell just happened? Ah, and all this kind of thing, right? And someone's like, ah, ha, ha, ha. So Tanshoku goes in and he does his match. And then all the rest of the matches proceed. Kenny was on that show as well, which is wonderful. I got to see Kenny wrestle, which was great. And so show finishes. After the show, I'm going and talking to the young boys. And I'm like, is Kenny here? Can I talk to Kenny? Because I've already been in touch with Kenny on the internet. And they're like, ah, we can't let you talk to Kenny. And I'm like, ah, I need to find someone I can talk to. Ah, I couldn't find someone to talk to. And so I'm like, ah, all right. So me and my buddy, we're schlepping it, disappointed. We couldn't find someone to talk to. Schlepping it back to the train station. And as we're going back to the train station, the referee from the match, he walks past me on the escalator and he recognized me and he goes, hey, that was a great sell you did when Dino kissed you. And I'm like, yeah, I'm a wrestler. I go, let me give you my CD. And he's like, oh, okay, cool. So I give him my DVD. I'm like, yes, good. So that happened. Kenny later on told me, yeah, he had seen my DVD at the office next to a DVD player. So he assumed that somebody had watched it. And then DDT got in touch.
I love it.
Yeah, man.
Just the hustle and the want and the, I love that. Yeah.
Yeah, bro. Tell you what, hustle all day. Anyone who, now I am assuming the people listening to this podcast are Joshi Pro Wrestling fans and other people interested in wrestling, and there'll be a contingency of people who are interested in a career in wrestling. Your ability to hustle is your greatest asset. If you can't get it together to go and approach people and create opportunities for yourself, you're going to have a lot of challenges. Because opportunities very rarely come to you. Sometimes they do, but you know, maybe one opportunity will show up in every, you know, couple of years. Whereas if you're going to make the opportunities, if you're going to go and find the opportunities, then you're only limited by how many opportunities you can create. So your hustle is what's required, aspiring wrestlers, aspiring referees, aspiring ring announcers, aspiring commentators, aspiring production staff, aspiring video crew. Get out there, put yourself out there, present yourself, make an opportunity for yourself, and tell them Ladybeard sent you. Don't tell them that, because maybe they don't like Ladybeard.
Who doesn't like Ladybeard?
Some people don't like. Look, listen. I've had many a pro wrestling match. Many a person takes issue with Ladybeard. I'll be doing my music show all the time, and some wrestler comes on stage, takes issue with Ladybeard, decides he has to have a fight with Ladybeard right there and then, in the middle of this live music venue, in front of these poor unsuspecting patrons. I have to dispose of him, get rid of him before I can continue my musical performance. It's very unreasonable, but if you want to see some of my musical performance, go and check out babybeard_japan on the internet, on the YouTube. Nipokara Konnichiwa and Pianizer are our first two songs. You can see them on YouTube now.
Pianizer.
Good. That was excellent. That was excellent pianizing.
I'm going to someday go to Japan and be a background dancer and singer for you.
Bro, I need you to shoot a cover video.
Done.
Yes.
Done. Yes, I will definitely do that.
Yes, I can't wait. Hell yeah. Eric, so now let me ask you a question, sir.
Yes, sir.
So now I'm sorry, you're in the United States, is that correct?
California, yes, sir.
California, yeah, I love California. Great. So you came to Japan, you saw some Joshi wrestling, you met Sakura-san, who's a wonderful woman, and you said, I must show Joshi wrestling to the world.
Yes.
Okay, cool. So from your individual perspective, tell me about your ambitions, sir.
For podcasting?
For the whole thing. Tell me your ambitions is an open-ended
it
statement.
Absolutely is. No, my ambitions was to break a wall down, the forbidden door, whatever they call it now, you know. I wanted to get the top women, because not a lot of them speak English, and a lot of them will do interviews. Mm. My goal, my ambitions were to get people, an English-speaking audience, to hear directly from the wrestlers themselves and teach them, make them more than wrestlers, make them human beings, you know, introduce them as human beings to the world.
You're a good man. Now, have you arranged that? I've listened to a few of your interviews, but generally speaking, do you work through a translator?
Yes. Yeah. If I have a friend here, he used to work at Sony in Japan, American. He's my interpreter for me.
I see. Yeah, no, you have actually, sir. I got to tell you, I commend you. You've done a very good job of getting Joshi's on this podcast, because actually that is a very hard thing to do. The interviewing system in Japan is a lot of the time very different from how it's considered in the Western world. And actually securing interviews can be extremely challenging. And then especially securing interviews as a foreigner, particularly challenging. So I commend you, sir. I assume there was a lot of hustling you did, yeah?
There was, and a lot of rejection, and a lot, you know, just my internal motor to want to do this outweighed all the negativity of the rejections or ignoring, you know, that kind of thing.
Good man, good man. So back to our point, aspiring wrestlers and so forth listening, it's all about your ambition and your hustle, as Eric Howard is a testament to.
And Ladybeard's a testament to.
God bless. Thank you, sir.
So,
this is
okay.
Amazing. We are getting into, this is some, hey, this is, we are covering some career advice over here.
Trying to pull off the dress and pull off your beard and let's see these. We can't put that on the internet. We pull your dress off, but.
Wait, you can't pull my dress off. What kind of bizarre attack on me is this, sir? Trying to nudify me? Hang on, now we're only doing voice here. Are you telling me, sir, that you're sitting here cross-dressed while you're talking to me right now?
I absolutely am. I'm in the moment.
Oh my goodness, this is fantastic. Eric Howard has committed himself, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm as hairy as you are too, so it's not, sometimes it's not so good.
Ah, oh, bro, not so good. It's the best thing. It's the perfect thing. It's exactly what you need. More Eric Howard in a skirt. That's what I say. More Eric Howard in a skirt.
All right, let's talk about your musical career, because
yes,
you went viral. What's it like to go viral?
It's a lot of people start paying a lot of attention to you very quickly. So there'll be so the video, Nippon Manju was the name of my first song with my former group that went viral. So it goes on the internet and you're like, all right, it's on the internet. So you share it on your social media and so forth. And then thinking about going viral is most of the time you don't realize you're going to go viral until you go viral. So put it up and then that night you go to bed or whatever. And then you wake up in the morning and you've got, you know, millions of views on your thing. And you've got just a ton of message requests and your Twitter's blowing up and your Facebook's blowing up and all the things are blowing up. And there's a lot of, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And you're like, oh my goodness. You're scrolling through all the things going, wait, is this actually happening? Is this you look at the view count and it's up to, you know, 1.5 million, 2 million, 3 million. And you're like, wait, okay, this is the real thing now. This is actually happening. Okay, here we go.
And it blows my mind just to think about this, but how do you and the band handle that instant recognition now?
Well, I mean, from my perspective, like we've already spoken about hustle and so forth.
Yeah.
I'd already been working for, I'd already been, working hard at the career for a long time. I'd already been wiped out by a financial crisis. I'd already had to move countries twice. So, I can only speak from my perspective. Mm-hmm. From my perspective, it was a kind of a case of, okay, cool. So wasn't wasting my time. Awesome. Here we go. Because like I say, as much as all those plastic surgeons are sitting there saying, should have gone with the cross-dressing wrestler and metal singer gimmick. Every now and again, the cross-dressing wrestler metal singer says, maybe this was a slightly high-risk endeavor to undertake. So when that happened, it was really a case of, okay, cool. But what's interesting is when something like that happens, that's when the hard work now begins. Mm. People think that's when the hard work ends. No, that's when the hard work begins. Because now you've, as we were talking about before, making opportunities. Well, now you've made the opportunity. But it's only an opportunity. And an opportunity is only as good as what you do with it.
Mm-hmm.
So basically the first 10 years of hustle and grind, that was just to get to the starting line. Then once Nippon Manju happens and now viral, okay, now the real work begins.
And you got to travel the world
with
that band. Well, tell me about that experience.
It's great. I love traveling the world. It's wonderful, actually. So this is one of the really great things about particularly doing stuff in Japan is that there's otakus, the people who love Japanese culture, all over the world. Mm-hmm. And getting access to the Japanese pop culture is actually very challenging if you're not Japanese. Because the Japanese, firstly, there's not much information available in English. Secondly, a lot of the time, even if it is, they're not really forthcoming with it. And a lot of Japanese artists and whatnot don't really want to go overseas. They're sort of, a lot of them seem they're quite comfortable in Japan. They like doing things under the Japanese systems because that's all they've ever known. And the Japanese systems are vastly different from the everyone else systems. And so most of them don't want to or feel they can't go overseas. So despite the fact that there is massive demand for Japanese pop culture all over the world, mm-hmm. and the anime conventions and all this kind of thing, it's very hard for everyone overseas to get access. So this has been one of the joys of my job in that I kind of get to be somewhat a bridge in that department, mm-hmm. and that I get to take the Japanese pop culture outside Japan. I get to show it to people everywhere. So that's actually one of the missions of my new group, Baby Beard. Which is, if you don't know, that's my new musical group. We've already mentioned it twice, but you can go on the YouTubes and watch Nippon Kara Konnichiwa and Pianizer. It's Lady Beard plus Babies. Baby Beard, that's the name of my group. Baby Beard _ Japan. That's where you can see the things. So that's me and two cute little Japanese girls. I scream and dance. The girls sing and dance. And we try to make everything as Japanesey and as kawaii as we possibly can. And we're trying to get that out to the world as much as possible and bridge that gap and break down the barriers between everyone else and Japan, just as you are doing, Eric Howard, sir. I commend you on that. But traveling the world is actually wonderful because it's, of course, firstly, you get to meet wonderful people all over the world and you get to interact with a lot of different cultures. Keep in mind that I, you know, already I'm a foreigner living in Japan. Mm-hmm. So now I get to go and experience all these different countries and cultures, which is really wonderful. And the overseas otakus are just so warm. It's remarkable, actually, how warm they are and how grateful they are when an artist from Japan comes to town. It's really a thing of beauty. And I'm deeply grateful to be able to do it.
How cool is it to like join your bandmates and let them explore the world for the first time and just see different cultures? I love to see foreigners here in America because I always try to interact with them and you know, try to show the best side of my country. But what's it like to go with, I mean, these girls are younger than you are and you're kind of maybe probably big brothers kind of thing to them, but what's it kind of like to go and be their translator and show them things and have them experience things for the first time in their lives?
It's quite amazing. It's sort of like being a dad. It's quite amazing, actually. So here's what's interesting. After we just mentioned how much passion and demand there is outside Japan for Japanese pop culture, inside Japan, the Japanese don't know about that demand at all. So
interesting.
The Japanese, most of them, don't know anything about anime conventions. They don't really realize that foreigners watch anime or read manga or are interested in Japanese wrestling. There's no proper understanding of it. So the first time we started going overseas doing conventions, like my old manager, she went to a convention for the first time. She was like, oh my goodness, this is amazing. Look at all these foreigners interested in Japan stuff. And I was like, yeah. Because I know about it because I'm a Westerner, right? She was like, we have no idea this exists. We were in... we did a convention in Mexico City, and then afterwards they have like a kind of like an otaku mall in Mexico City, and it's not real. I guess it's like one building, and it's like four floors or something, and they're selling all the otaku stuff and the Japanese stuff and the nerd stuff and the video game stuff and all that in this one mall building thing, right? And we go up there, and my old manager was just amazed by the whole thing. She's like, "Look at all this anime stuff the foreigners are consuming." And I'm like, yeah, man. Like, to me, it was like, we have a shop like this in every city. And she's like, ah, her mind is blowing. So going overseas with the girls is, it's quite a beautiful thing, actually. There's a lot of things that are different about Japan. Like, a lot of things that are different about Japan. And there's a lot of things that happen overseas that to us are just really standard. And the Japanese are just, is blown away by. First time I was in Europe with the girls, we caught like a small plane from from like one German city to another German city or something, and they were amazed at being on this small plane. I'm like, what, why is this amazing? Like, well, it's an aeroplane but it's small. I'm like, yeah. They're like, it's amazing, I've never seen an aeroplane this small. I'm like, okay. doesn't strike me as something worth noting, but apparently it is. So it's quite amazing going overseas with the girls, actually. It's quite beautiful to see them discover other cultures and discover new things.
I took my niece to Japan, and when we came back to LAX, we got out of the airplane, and there's some Japanese people on the airplane, obviously. I told my niece, look at those people over there. How you felt when you got out of the airport in Narita is exactly how they feel here walking into America. You know, just the magicness, that's not even a word, but the magic of a foreign country, you know?
Yeah, it's really quite beautiful. And what you realize as well is the first time you go overseas, let's say the first time you go overseas is from America to Japan. Now, your idea of the world outside America is Japan, and that's all it is, right? Mm-hmm. But then you realize, oh my goodness, there's like 167 other countries in the world and they're all different. There's a lot of places to explore.
So, okay, now you're with Baby Beard. Yes. Tell me about the two babies with the beard. Introduce us to them.
Goodness. Well, I provide the beard. The babies are working hard on their beards and look straight up. They need to put in more effort in that department. I'll be frank with you. We have SZA and we have Kotomi. Both of them were selected from a worldwide audition. So we held auditions. Hundreds of people from all over the world auditioned to be in this group. And it was kind of a case of went from like 200 or something down. I broke it down to 100, broke it down to 50, broke it down to 20. And finally, these were the girls who made the final cut. Kotomi, wonderful little dancer, constantly on the ticky-tocky, constantly doing the K to the pop to the dance. You can go to her TikTok, which has a difficult to remember name, so I'm not going to say it. But you can go to her TikTok if you ever find out what its name is. You can watch her dance. She dances non-stop. SZA, biggest smiler in Japan. SZA has the biggest smile I've ever seen. It is the smile that will melt your heart. They're both doing a wonderful job. They are the babies. I am Ladybeard. Together we are Babybeard, and we hope you enjoy our musical entertainment product.
And I love the dance videos too.
Thanks, man.
Are you a natural? I mean, are you dancing? Tell me about your dancing.
Oh, bro. I was not a dancer at all until I got put in pop groups and told, well, you're a dancer now, figure it out. I'm like, wait, what? I had done in drama school, we did some dancing, but it was like music theater, you know? So it's definitely not this pop stuff. And then beyond that, in my personal life, I had done ballet, which I really enjoy and I find really beautiful. But that is a long way from being this pop stuff as well. So put in pop groups. All right. You're now a dancer. You're now a dancer. Match the intensity of a pair of girls. They're half your age and half your weight and female. Go. It's your problem. Wait, what? You've got 2 weeks. Wait, what? And do it whilst screaming, by the way. So when you scream, when you do death metal screams, like, aah! What you normally do is you use the muscles in your neck and your back to support that noise. So that's one of the ways that you don't hurt yourself. And so you kind of, you know, I guess to use colloquial terms, you tense up the muscles in your back and the muscles in your neck, and that supports the noise coming out, right? But once you're jumping around and dancing, of course, you can't stay flexed the whole time. So I had to learn a whole new vocal technique in order to be able to scream and dance at the same time, because that is something that most heavy metal singers are not doing. So it's a whole new dynamic. Tell you what, Eric Howard, you are getting some deep dirt on this podcast, my friend. You are getting, we don't normally discuss things this deeply. This is, you are doing some Howard Stern pulling out the goodness here, my friend. I need to drink a little bit of my fluids over here. I'm getting, my goodness.
I want the human lady beard to come out. So the young ladies with you, the babies, we love them. So the visual, I think, that caught me more than you with the girls is you dancing. That's what kind of, I don't want to say made me laugh, but made me like, this is, you know, this is different. This is awesome. This guy is going for it. It's not so much the singing, it's the dancing.
Oh, thank you, man. Yeah, thank you very much. Listen, yes, look. Most large bearded pro wrestlers don't dance often. And when they do, they probably don't scream death metal whilst dancing. And in the strange event that that happens, they're probably not doing it in Japanese, flanked by two adorable little Japanese girls. So yes, I would agree with you, sir. We have a unique product.
So this is the Joshi Pod, and we talk about some wrestling as well. Are your wrestling days behind you? You still got one left in you?
Oh, I still got one left in me. Look, I haven't done very much of it since the start of the pandemic because, yeah, you know, it's not the best thing to be doing up close personal huffy puffy with another human when there's a deadly virus swishing around. but no, my wrestling days are still well within my grasp. Like I say, every time I do a music show, some clown runs on stage deciding to take issue with me, and I need to sort them out before I can even finish my music show. So look, Ladybeard does not even need a ring to be forced into a wrestling situation. Wrestling just enters my life, and I am forced. I have no choice but to sort it out there on the spot, or I can't get back to what I was doing. Sometimes I'm just at home, and I'm, like, clipping my nails or something, and a pro wrestler will bust through the window. I'm like, oh, for crying out loud. I need to sort this out. It's the Masked Luchador. You might have seen the Masked Luchador on the Trash Taste podcast. My goodness, with his multicolored hair and his luchador mask and his pink t-shirt always getting in my way. I need to dispense with him, get him out of my apartment before I can go back to clipping my nails. Frankly, he interrupted me whilst my nails were pointy and sharp. Ooh. I tried very hard not to scratch him, and I'm still waiting for a thank you.
You're gonna get a Freddy Krueger on him, huh?
Well, no, I didn't want to do that, you know. That's, hey, listen, listen. There's already one Freddy Krueger. We don't need Lady Krueger in the house. That's not going to happen for anyone.
All right. So, looking through your match history, I love the fact that you have run into some of the great Joshi wrestlers in Japan.
Oh, cool. Yes, I have. Mio, who you have interviewed?
I have.
Yep. She's my buddy. She has kicked me in the head many a time. She has kicked me in the head many a time. Maki, who you've also interviewed.
Yep.
Yes, she has cross-bodied onto me more than once. I have been Maki cross-bodied more than once. Sakura-san, who we've already spoken about. Mm-hmm. She's my buddy. Have I been in the ring with Sakura-san? I believe I have. I think I tag-teamed with her.
You did, yeah.
Yeah, wow, you know my match history better than I do. I'm sitting here trying to remember my matches, and you're like, no, you did this thing, you did this thing, you did this thing. You are a well-researched man.
Another person I love her work is Cherry, and you've had some matches with Cherry as well.
Cherry's wonderful, man. She's such a sweet girl. Yeah, she's kicked me in the head many a time as well. She, tell you what, I my first year here, I won the Union Pro Fly to Everywhere Championship from Cherry, and in that match, she attempted to shave my beard. And oh my goodness, I mean, it was a moment of danger. The fans were terrified, but beard power prevailed.
Who do you trust to trim your beard?
Oh, look, listen. Hey, there's no trimming. This beard naturally sprouts forward and is perfect at all times, totally unmanicured. The beard is its own trimming agent. The beard takes on a life of its own. The beard is in and of itself. Your new Prime Minister. Please welcome the new Prime Minister of wherever abouts, Lady Beard's Beard, a.k.a. Tim.
I'm a bearded man myself.
Yes, you are. Good man.
And if my name had beard in it, I would be so worried when I'm shaving or trimming that I'm like, my name is Beard and I have to be in public tomorrow and I just screwed up my beard.
Well, first things first, you need to be careful. First things first, I'm going to call you Eric Beard from here on in.
I'm part of the Eric, Beard family. Thank you.
Yes. Eric the Red, Eric the Bearded. Yes. First things first, you can be careful. Secondly, does your beard grow back?
It does.
Okay, how long does it take for your beard to grow back?
A couple weeks, but I've jacked my beard up pretty good and trimming it, and it's like, oh boy, start over.
Oh really, is that right?
Yeah.
Hang on, wait, so start over, what do you mean?
I shave it completely off.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Hang on a second, explain this logic, please.
So I cut too low on one side. I'm trying to trim my Wolfman hairs on the top of my face. And I try to, I don't know, you have those Wolfman hairs too, like going up towards your eye a little bit?
Wolfman as like the top of the cheeks near the cheekbones. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Oh, look, the Wolfman occasionally makes an appearance.
So I trim those and I'm probably not as careful as I should be. And I like, ooh, and I like, and it looks really funky and it's like a straight line somewhere. And it's like, oh boy. This is not right. Fixable.
Hang on. So you're pro straight line and you're anti straight line?
I try to just keep it natural. I'm looking at the mirror right now. I try to keep it in a natural curve. I got a little round cheek, so I like to keep it a little curvy.
Okay. Right. So your normal strategy is you take off the whole thing. You go, yeah, okay. You go total stripped down nude and then you begin again. From inception. And how often do you repeat this process?
Twice a year, maybe.
Oh, I see. So it's a long beard.
Yeah, it can get pretty long. I just recently took it off, so I got kind of a short one right now.
I see.
I'm not a very handsome man, so the more I cover my face...
Oh, come on now. There's no need to say things like that. You're a beautiful man.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I have no words of advice for you, Eric, in the department, I'm afraid. Listen, if you've got a system that works for you, stick with it.
When's the last time you shaved it completely off?
What is this shave completely off that you talk about? What is this nonsense? I exited the womb with this beard. It's been a source of distrust and disunity for all my loved ones since day one.
I'm going to send Cherry a DM and have her stretch you and shave your beard off.
Oh my goodness, I'm sure she'll oblige. Cherry will stretch me and shave me any day. She's a very good wrestler, Cherry. All of them, actually. They're really good. The standard of Japan's extremely high.
Oh, it is. They're killers, too. They can do some damage if they want to.
So, my goodness. So, the first time I wrestled Mio in the ring, I remember I was... There was a show the day before, which I was appearing on. I wasn't wrestling on it, but I was appearing on it. And I was hanging out. I was talking to one of the other wrestlers. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not on the show today. I'm wrestling tomorrow. And he's like, oh, cool. Who have you got tomorrow? I'm like, oh, Mio. He goes, oh, you've got Mio? He goes, oh, gosh, she kicks you so hard. She hits you so hard. Mio hits you harder than any of the men. Oh, it's brutal. In fact, we got all the girls. Shuri as well, Kondor Shuri.
Yeah.
She's a legitimate Muay Thai fighter and a legitimate MMA fighter. And UFC, she's fought, yeah. fought in the UFC. That's right. Getting kicked by that girl is no joke, ladies and gentlemen. It doesn't matter that she's half my weight. She's got 10 times my kicking capacity. That girl's a murderer.
All right, so one of the legends you've been in the ring with, Aja Kong, absolute wrestling legend. What's it like to be in it? She's another killer.
She is, yeah, she's definitely a killer. She's a woman who hits you hard as well. Great being in there with her. Kind of intimidating because she's so legendary, you know? Every match, I guess, there's the possibility of getting injured, I suppose, but it's much less a worry in that department. And it's much more a case of, I'm in the ring with Aja Kong. You really don't want to mess up when you're with Aja Kong, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. It feels like it's a high pressure, high stakes situation.
You got to team and perform with Rika Saiki as well.
She
seems like such a sweetheart.
She is wonderful, actually, and very tough as well. She is no joke. She's a little hardcore muscle nugget is what she is. Yeah, no, Rika's fantastic. My old pop group was called Dead with Lolita, and that was a duet of me and Rika. So we have wrestled together in the middle of music shows all over the world too. And that girl's a monster, man. She is a murderer, really.
Yeah, that's the theme of all these Joshi wrestlers. They're all murderers.
All murderers. But Reika has biceps the size of my head. She is the real thing.
So in between bands, COVID happens, right? How does that affect the launch of Baby Beard?
It's far from ideal, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's when your whole thing is based around live shows and touring. A travel stopping live show destroying pandemic really isn't what you need. So it's been far from ideal, but look, so we've been these things happen. We've been doing everything that we can over the internet and so forth. It's so our first song, Nippon Kara Konnichiwa, Hello from Japan, that really the theme of that song is about, well, we would like to physically be with you now and physically give you a hug, but whilst that's currently impossible, until it is possible, we're sending all our love and good vibes to you through the web waves. So please accept and anticipate when we can meet face to face. It's been far from perfect. It's been far from ideal.
How you handle it personally, being in a foreign country and kind of lockdown?
Again, it's not ideal, is it?
No.
But at the start of it, I sort of said, you know what, I'm not really organized to just get up and go home for however long.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of said, all right, well, that means I'm going to stay in Japan. And that means come what may, I'm going to ride it out. Mm-hmm. Now, look, I had no idea that, you know, we'd be more than 2 years later, we'd still be dealing with this. And had I known that, you know, perhaps I would have made different decisions at the start. But once you look, when things like this happen, you kind of, you first things first, you sort of have to accept it, don't you? This has happened. You have zero power to stop it or change it or control it. So just what are you going to do now? That's all you've got. So with that in mind, you know, it's one of the joys of the 21st century is we can do the internet talking with the family and so forth, and with everybody else. And with every disaster comes opportunity. So having 2 years not being able to go anywhere or really see anyone or do anything, that does provide for a lot of, you know, solitude at home time. So free time is a resource and a commodity that a lot of people don't usually get in their busy, busy lives. So when you suddenly find yourself with an abundance of it, the question is, all right, how am I going to utilize this newly found resource of all this spare time? So, yeah, I utilized my spare time well. That's what I
Now that's the story of Lady Beard is the drive and the there's more than the hair and the ponytails and stuff. There's a drive and a want and a will to succeed, which I find so admirable. I really do.
Thanks, bro. Thank you, man. I really appreciate that. It's an interesting balance, right? Because you'll go and you'll do a whole lot of goal setting and planning and whatnot, and then nothing ever happens according to that plan. So you need to at the simultaneously remain, well, that wasn't a word, remain focused on what you're trying to achieve and why you're trying to achieve it, and those are kind of your overarching principles. But then at the same time, you need to be flexible on your approach because your approach will be forced to change by external circumstances over which you have no control. Wow, this has become a goal setting podcast, hasn't it?
I love it. That's what you are, though. It's you're the living embodiment of it.
Thanks, man. I mean, yeah, look, there's really no other way. Yeah, and it's tough. It's a lot of the time it's tough, but you eventually get left with, all right, what can I do? What am I trying to achieve? What can I do right now? All right, how can we, what can be done now that can bring me closer to what I'm trying to achieve? Even if it's not the original plan that I made, or if it's not the ideal circumstances or whatever, what can be done? And you know, that's, I think that's kind of the most you can do a lot of the time. Yeah, nothing ever happens according to plan. And
What are the plans now for Baby Beard, kind of going forward now that the world is
well,
opening up a little bit?
finally we got the world opening up, which is fantastic. So finally, shows and international shows are back. So we got the two music videos up on the YouTubes, we got the dance videos up and the lyrics videos. The Pianizer lyrics video is coming soon, so keep your eyes on that, ladies and gentlemen. Then as of this month, yes, been announced, I can say it publicly, Lady Beard, unfortunately it's not the girls because, you know, because of global conditions, Lady Beard is coming back to Spain, which is my biggest fan base in Europe, so I'm thrilled. I'm going to be appearing at Japan Weekend A Coruña on March 26 and 27, so I'm very excited about that. Finally, Spain was the last country I went to before the pandemic, and now it's the first country I'm going to after the pandemic. So yeah, I love Spain very much. My people, can't wait to see him again. And then we have With the Girls, very exciting. We are coming to Brazil. We are coming to Brazil, São Paulo. Anime Friends in São Paulo. That's happening in July. Yes, that's going to be Baby Beard. I can't say the name of my group. Baby Beard's first ever international appearance. So anyone who's in Brazil or near Brazil or just wants to check out Brazil, you should totally come down to Anime Friends in São Paulo in July and check out Baby Beard's first ever international show. It's going to be something to remember.
Have you been to Brazil before?
Yes, I have.
There's a quite a large Japanese community in Brazil, correct?
Massive, massive. Yeah, it's interesting, actually, because apparently after World War II, there was a lot, like a big slab of Japanese people went over to Brazil and settled in Brazil, and now there's like third-generation Brazilian-born Japanese. So it's very interesting over there, because whilst they are ethnically Japanese, and they speak Japanese, they've kind of developed their own culture of being Brazilian Japanese. So it's actually a really interesting thing to go and interact with.
That's pretty cool. That's cool. Okay, so I'm going to ask a selfish question now. When are you coming to America?
Oh my goodness, when are we coming to America? Don't know. Hey, if you're an event organizer in the United States, what you need to do is invite Lady Beard and Baby Beard to your anime convention, to your music festival, to your otaku meet and greet conglomerate. We will come to the United States. We will change your life with the most amazing live performance you have ever experienced. We'll go the entire United States. We'll come down to California. We'll go all the way up to Portland and Seattle. We'll head on down to Kansas City. We'll ever even spam a spot up in old Maine. Coming to the United States. Don't know when, but if you know someone who wants to bring us, please put them in contact with us. Thanks.
I will put in a good word for you.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that.
So let's wrap up here. A couple of last questions. Yeah. What's the most difficult thing about being Lady Beard?
The most difficult thing about Lady Beard is definitely the endless existential guilt which follows me around every day, just pulling on my soul like an anchor, chained to my consciousness, just dragging me further and further down into the depths of despair from which there could be no recovery. Probably the hardest thing about being Lady Beard is doing the things, getting through the things, getting enough sleep and enough food to continue doing the things. Resources are scarce at times.
What's the best thing about being Lady Beard?
Oh, look, the best thing about Lady Beard is 100% getting to meet the fans, especially meet them face-to-face. It's wonderful meeting them over the internet, but particularly face-to-face, meeting the fans is really something wonderful. Because as an entertainer, you do not know if you're actually providing any value to the world or not until you meet the fans face to face. Because on the internet, people could just say things and it's, you know, doesn't really mean, you don't really get a sense of if they're actually enjoying it or not. And, you know, if you're a doctor, the value you create for the world is very apparent. You turn up to a doctor with a broken leg, he does his thing, you don't have a broken leg anymore. You know, if you're a plumber, you turn up at a house with a leaking pipe, you do your thing, the pipe's not leaking anymore. If you're an entertainer, you actually don't know if you're creating value in the world or not until people come. And face to face, you can see the emotional value that you create for them in their face when you meet them and hug them one on one. So that's definitely the best part of the whole thing.
Is there a family portrait out there anywhere of you in your full Lady Beard outfit with your family?
Oh, look, it's just, listen, it's just, it's a portrait of a collection of beards. That's all it is. You just see hair. You see hair and the occasional item of clothing. Yeah, it's one of those old-timey black and white photos from like back in the Civil War days. Yeah, everyone's got one of those funny bonnets on and like a bib around their neck and then just body hair. That's all it is. My goodness.
Mommy beard, daddy beard.
Lady yeah, beard. Exactly. A baby beard. That's where we got the name of the group from. Wow. Exactly. Right.
Have you performed in front of your family?
I have, actually. They love it. They're fantastic. They're so funny. Yeah, no, they were great. They were very, very funny.
Your family in the crowd, like waving the little lights out and stuff.
Yeah. Like, yeah. They love it. They're wonderful.
That's great to hear.
Mom had to sit at the back. Because she's an older lady, she wanted to sit down, so we had to bring her a chair before the show. I'm pretty sure she was the only seated member of the audience at the show. Dad wasn't. Dad was in the front row. Dad was rocking out. Dad had a blast.
That's awesome. I'm so happy to hear that your parents support you in all this, your endeavors. That's wonderful.
Thank you. I'm actually very lucky. My parents are awesome. They said at a young age, whatever you want to do, whatever's going to make you happy, you do it. So I'm like, cool. Thanks, Mom and Dad.
Wonderful. Bless. All right, Lady Beard, let's get your plugs in one more time, buddy.
Everybody, please head down to the internet. Check out Ladybeard underscore Japan, as in lady that has beard, one word, underscore Japan. And also my group, Baby Beard, as in baby that has beard, or babies plus Ladybeard, however you want to say it, Baby Beard underscore Japan. You can do it on the Twitter. You can do it on the Facebook. You can do it on the Instagram, the TikTok, and the YouTubeus. And on the YouTubeus, you can even watch the music videos for our first songs, Bonkara Konnichiwa and Pianizer. And if you are anywhere near Sao Paulo, Brazil, we will see you in July. And wherever you may be around the world, as the world starts to open up, we are coming to you ASAP. So keep your eyes on all the social media. We're coming to you. We cannot wait to bring the magic of Japan straight to you. I am Ladybeard. Eric Howard, my friend, thank you so much for having me on the Joshi Pod.
All my pleasure, and I hope to meet you someday, my next trip to Japan or your next trip to California.
Yeah, bro, that sounds wonderful. I cannot wait. You hit me up when you come to Japan, yeah?
Absolutely.
Good man, that's what I'm talking about.
All right, guys, next week, I've got Tei Hanma on the podcast, so listen to that. But Ladybeard, one last time, I just want to say thank you for taking the time to do this, and thank you to your team. And yeah, check out Baby Beard. The babies are so adorable.
They are. They're wonderful. Thank you, Eric. Thank you so much for having us today, man. This is really fun.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, bro. Thanks, Joshi Pod listeners. See you soon.